Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, Degrassi world and all you alum. It is once again time for a Degrads podcast. I am one of your hosts, Shane Warren Kippel, Gavin, quote, Spinner, end quote, Mason.
I am Mike Lobel, a.k.a. Jay Hogart. Thanks for having me on, Shane.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for being here. Have you been, sir?
Good. We're getting Amika is going to Calgary to work on a horse show for a month starting on Monday. So I'm trying to, you know, spend some time with her.
A horse show, the Canadian Yellowstone.
Well, in a way, yes, actually, we refer to Heartland, which Amika is writing on, as horse show.
Horse show. Got it. One can understand.
There's like more horse actors than human actors on that show. Because every horse has, there's like an acting horse for the one horse. Then they have a lookalike horse that's a stunt horse. And then they've got like a, in case something happens, I think, backup.
Horse?
Yeah. Okay. It's like three horses per character.
And do they have a war horse in case something goes?
Yeah. Awry? That's the stunt horse.
The stud horse is also a soldier horse.
He's a soul. He goes to fight. Cool. Yeah.
And what about if there are police patrolling the set? Are they also on horseback?
Well, you would think.
I would hope.
Otherwise, especially if somebody steals a horse, you need to chase.
That's right. I like this. So okay, cool.
We're busy, yeah. Anyway, but it's funny because everybody in on our Discord, they're always commenting like, "Oh, so and so is also on Heartland." And I always kind of chuckle to myself. We share a lot of cast. In Canada, just generally.
In Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're starting to see a lot of that. The more TV you watch, American cinema, British cinema, it's the same cast of working actors that appear in almost every show.
Truly.
And I love it. I love recycled actors. They impress a writer, they impress a producer, and they're like, you are going to be at the top of my list anytime I have a future production in mind. I love it.
It's great.
Yeah, I look at it as like the Adam Sandler or the Seth Rogen effect, where you're after a certain point, you love working with your friends and you're just handing them opportunities to work so you can all just have a great time on.
Yeah,
set
just
together.
Hang out and like be and laugh.
Yeah. And get some really solid work in there, too.
I'll never forget.
It really does.
I rue the day that Seth Rogen once invited me to set while he was shooting 40-Year-Old Virgin. And I was like, I'll stay at home. He was like, dude, you got to come to set. It's amazing. We got Steve Carell. I was like, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, 40-Year-Old Virgin is one of those. That was a star maker of a movie, right?
It was, yeah.
Dude, everyone was. Yeah, everyone. I think Jonah Hill had his first small role in the... What was it, the Amazon store or whatever? He had one scene. Seth Rogen was a supporting character. Steve Carell was, I mean, his biggest role to date, aside from The Office before that, was what? He was Evan Almighty.
Oh, yeah, Evan Almighty.
And that might have actually been after. He was Evan, like, supporting Bruce Almighty in Bruce Almighty. Mm-hmm. So that was very much a star maker, just like... the first Hangover was for everyone involved in it. Mm-hmm.
When that movie came out, everything changed. And comedy just went in a totally brand new direction for 10 years. It was pretty...
It was an exciting time.
It was an exciting time to be alive. And I remember, I'll never forget the first time I like sat in a movie theater and the previews came on. This looks really familiar. Why do I know what this is about? And I'm realizing, oh my God, this is 40-year-old mm-hmm. virgin. And then I got it. I was like, oh, I know who Steve Carell is now.
And you're sitting at home. You're like, what did I end up doing that day? Oh, I just went to bed early.
Yeah, I like played video games my life. Or something.
Yeah.
I'd like to think I was reading a script or preparing for an audition. This was in LA, right? Pilot season, but.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Anyway, Mike, we have an episode to discuss. A very heavy episode.
For sure. This episode is called Don't Believe the Hype. And, you know, it's all about the masks that we wear to survive in high school. And first of all, Hazel finally gets a spotlight. In an episode, it's kind of about absorbing the negative messages about yourself. And there's like some internalized racism in this episode.
Mm-hmm. It's a racial prejudices and gender stereotypes in the B plot. Yeah.
And actually, they dovetail really nicely. Like they actually connect in one line, which we'll get to. But and Andrea Lewis, I got to say, like, man, when she has a thought, it comes across her eyes instantly. Yeah. Like you can see everything she's thinking. It's really, I don't know if I've ever seen that. It was quite stark.
It's also because she is the queen of eye rolls and you have to have expressive eyes.
The eye roll, but also she can do like a smile with her eyes that is like beyond. Anyways, she's got like a nice warmth to her. And there's such a tragedy to her character in this. Now, I kind of knew going in what the reveal was, right?
Me too. It was spoiled for us.
It was spoiled for me. And and so I'm trying to think of like what it would be like if you were watching this for the first time. You would kind of think like she's a racist jerk. But like, I knew what was coming. So I could see the like pain in and the internal struggle that she was going through.
Me too.
The whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She did a good job.
Just about eyes for a second. Mine would be more expressive if they weren't so deep set. When I smile, they disappear completely. So I get screwed in two ways.
Yeah, but you got those nice lines on the side, the smile lines that do the like
crow's feet.
Yeah.
Which will one day become crow's feet.
I guess
you
didn't have those when you were 18, did you?
Probably not, but I'm about to turn 40, so time takes us all. Yeah.
And there's another movie about another Apatow film about being 40.
Yes. This is 40 with characters inspired by Knocked Up.
Which I used to think when I saw This is 40, I was like, I don't have to worry about that for a while. Woo, I blew past 40.
What I love to think about is Judd Apatow, and, you know, he's married to Leslie Mann and has been for a very long time. And those are actually their children and both Knocked Up and This is 40. But he's transplanted Paul Rudd as her actual husband in two movies. And I'm just wondering, as a director, do you get uncomfortable watching another man pretend to be the husband and to your wife and father to your kids?
He's clearly got the only Paul Rudd kind of thing going.
Yeah. Like, I wonder if he's so close with Judd that he's like, you're the only person I would ever trust with my family like this.
I'd trust him. Paul Rudd, if you want to come on in here and take my family.
Anyway, on to the episode.
Don't Believe the Hype. It's a song by Public Enemy released in 1988 on the album It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. And the song, it's basically a warning against buying into stereotypes. It challenges media narratives and the version of reality that, you know, people are always trying to sell you. And yeah, so I think that's quite appropriate for this episode.
This is also season 2, episode 11, Canadian air date December 1st, 2002, U.S. air date December 23rd, 2002. The story was by James Hurst. David Sutherland did the story and the teleplay, and it was directed by Degrassi's own Anais Granovsky.
Whoa, that's
cool. Who played Lucy on the original series. So that would make two former Degrassi cast members that became directors and went on to direct episodes of Degrassi.
I do remember meeting Anais, though, when I was like little kid and I was on, not a little kid, but I was younger and I was on someone else's set as a visit. And Anais was there and I was so starstruck.
I think in between season 1 and season 2, Stefan Brogren, who was hot out of film school at that point, a movie out, an indie movie that he produced and wrote called The Invitation. And what he did was he threw a house party and didn't tell people. There were four or five key players that all had stories that they needed to, you know, realize throughout the party, but it was all improv as these people tried to go what? Around and
wait. So the other guests didn't know that it was going down. Or it was just all improv.
The house party was a real house party, and I think crazy. They had to use their real first names so that the fourth wall wasn't broken by right. other people calling them. Yeah, it was actually very, very well done. And Anais was there, so at the premiere, that was my first time meeting her, and I got to see her work with Stefan. I think there were love interests in the movie itself. You should ask him about it, or dude, when he's so on the podcast cool. we'll ask him about
I
it.
I can't wait to see that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's get to the episode, shall we?
Yeah.
Now we open with Terry and Hazel at their lockers, and they're talking about what Terry will bring for International Day. Spoiler alert, it's haggis, which will be in honor of her Scottish lineage. Hazel doesn't seem to be too excited by trying traditional haggis, but... Yeah. Paige enters as the fashion police and cites Terry for wearing last year's jeans. And then she gets a counter fine about her season starting mullet, Paige's season starting mullet. But then Hazel's eyes drift and she spots a few Muslim students wearing hijabs. And as they pass, Hazel stops them and cites them as being fashion terrorists. When Ooh. This is over with, Paige shares her displeasure with this act, saying that if she was offended, you know that someone went too far. But Hazel replies, hey, if you dress that way, what do you expect?
When the camera reveals Fariza coming down the hallway, I screamed in slow motion, Hazel, no! I kind of knew what was about to happen.
Like Austin Powers with the yeah. With the not steamroller. Steamroller?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Anyway.
Of course, like we're doing something quite interesting here. We have a person of color and she ends up being like saying some really racist stuff mm-hmm. right in the first 15 seconds of this episode. It was yeah. like I couldn't quite. It was a real shocker.
And as this episode goes on and reveals itself, they start to have some very important but uncomfortable conversations in mm-hmm. this, especially when it gets to everyone's opinion on certain matters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it sounds like so many conversations that go on Instagram or Reddit or Twitter or anything.
It does.
Anyway, we'll get there when we get there. We roll credits. After said credits, we're now in Simpsons class. Spinner and Jimmy have their hacky sack confiscated by Simpson as the class begins. And then Simpson Remember those? Reiterates.
Are hacky sacks still a thing?
They're definitely not mainstream anymore. They've gone underground, I think. I miss them. I was never really good, but...
You guys looked like you were doing your best.
Well, you know, Spinner has the hair to support that kind of hobby.
I love that Spinner in this scene says, what if you don't have a culture?
Yeah.
Because he's like a bleach blonde skater boy playing hacky sack.
Yeah, yeah. He's just a Canadian caker and doesn't think that there's anything special to him. Spinner, we've had this discussion. Everyone has a culture. But then after that moment, Hazel just doesn't want to participate. She asks, what happens if I just do nothing? To where Simpson says that participation is 10% of their grade. If she chooses not to do anything, well, then she's at risk of losing 10% of her mark, which motivates Paige to offer assistance to Hazel and piggybacks this onto inviting herself over to Hazel's house for the first time as their best friends, but Paige has never been over.
Mm-hmm.
Suspect. Mm-hmm. What is Hazel hiding?
I thought it was a really cool moment in class where they're introducing this idea of International Day. And in the background, Mr. Simpson is going through attendance and going through everybody's last name.
Yes. For the first time ever using the last
name. For the first time ever. So you're hearing all these different
classic names. Mix of, exactly.
Totally. Yeah. I thought that was a really nice touch.
It was a nice touch. Yep. Yes. We are in a new class with a teacher, Mr. Morton, and I can only assume it's like a
home ed
or family studies type of course.
I'm wondering at this point why we haven't spent a lot more time in home ec on this show, because I thought it was a nice vibe.
It was a nice vibe. And Degrassi has a really large school budget for all of these, I guess, fringe classes. Everyone has their own sewing machine. Those things are not cheap. And they're kind of dangerous if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I miss shop class.
They like did not give us sewing machines. They gave us a needle and thread. They were like, okay, you can't do too much damage with this.
Mm-hmm. And a dull needle at that.
Yeah.
So Liberty stresses over her ineptitude for sewing, but JT is quite proficient, as we see. Toby also is lacking in this area. But when Sean, also bad, says sewing is for girls, why are we even doing this? And sees JT's skill at it, he dubs him Gay-T, which gets a laugh from everybody. Embarrassed, JT quickly switches with Liberty and tells everyone that the well-crafted pillow is actually Liberty's, even accepting a lower grade to avoid being emasculated.
It's a little casual homophobia there, JT.
A little bit in the early 2000s, this was...
Yeah, no, that tracks. That tracks.
And it still probably does track to some extent today. Depends on where you are. They're still undertones.
I don't really know. I mean, like, it's been a long time since I've been in grade school. How are they misbehaving today?
I was filming a project out in Vermont. And when we were finished, we were in this little university town. And in the town, after we wrapped, we went out to a bar, a college bar. It wasn't karaoke, but the DJ was playing all of these pop hits from the 90s and early 2000s, like Britney Spears, Backstreet Boys. And you see all of these, like, these jock guys with their arms around each other singing along to Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and Britney and Christina. And I'm just thinking, like, you couldn't do that when I was a kid. You couldn't do it. And this is beautiful. They're just people having fun and loving life and singing along to music that they enjoy.
Been singing along to since he was a teenager.
Well, I was always a closet Backstreet Boys, and I wasn't
surprised
a
you haven't pointed to that. Britney. Yeah, there it is, folks.
there it is.
The point there was imminent. Go.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus T&Cs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Back to the show. Spinner and Jimmy walk through the hallway, and Spin says that his mom said, essentially, when he asked her about his culture, she pointed to the globe and said, "You're from Earth," drawing a snide remark from Paige saying that she had her doubts. Spin brushes it off in a moment that I thought was quite well executed, and walks on, leaving Hazel and Paige alone. Hazel still won't budge on participating in the International Day Fair. Paige tells her to bring in jerk chicken and just be done with it. But when Hazel asks why jerk chicken, Paige replies with, "Because you're Jamaican, aren't you?" To which Hazel unconvincingly confirms.
Yeah.
What is she hiding?
Yes, I am.
Yes, of course. Jamaican mon.
There was a few mons in the episode.
But Stefan can get away with anything.
Yeah, he can.
Next scene, Liberty finds JT on the front steps and stresses about the next assigned sewing project for Mr. Morton, which she gets a skirt now. But her complaining is not being acknowledged by JT to an extent that she's comfortable with. He just tells her that she'll be fine. So this sparks Liberty to threaten to out JT as the next Martha Stewart if he doesn't help her with the skirt.
I have never heard Martha Stewart's name brought up in a blackmail situation before. Did you see the documentary, by the way, on Martha Stewart?
No, I didn't. I heard it was really well done, but I didn't see it.
I don't know if that would be blackmail material at this point. Or maybe
at this
would.
Point, depended. No. At that depends. Point, absolutely.
Yeah.
She hadn't gone to prison yet.
Yeah, she hadn't been hanging with Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, she didn't have her street cred yet.
Yeah.
Hazel arrives at her favorite Jamaican restaurant, which we find out later is called the Crescent Moon, and speaks with Wayne about getting her classmates a true taste of Jamaica. She needs enough jerk chicken for 50 people to sample. They both think that they might not like curry goat. I would love some curry goat.
Yeah, hell yeah. This whole episode got me craving jerk chicken so bad. But I go to Jerk King, which is like my...
I love Jerk King.
Yeah,
their patties are incredible.
Yeah, the patties are so good.
I didn't know patties could be that good. I used to live very close to Raps and Randy's.
Shout out Raps and Randy's.
Yeah, I was over at Eglinton and Oakwood, so these were two hot spots for Jamaican food, and Randy's Patties only did patties and would only accept cash. I honestly did not know that patties could be better than the frozen ones that you could get at the supermarket.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Now I'm hungry.
So as Wayne is preparing Hazel's 50-person sampling of jerk chicken, he asks her why she's choosing Jamaica for her project as she's not from the island. So then Hazel quickly makes up the story that it's a geography project and she's always had an affinity for Jamaica, which does the trick for Wayne. And because he's a nice guy, he takes a tourism poster.
What a nice guy.
Yes. We also, he said, I'll help you out. You're a good customer. I'll help you out with the price. But he never told her what the price was.
$320.
Yeah, exactly. That it was a whole steam tray.
Yeah.
That could not have been cheap. But she should have probably confirmed with him what he would charge her.
Yeah. This made it all so much worse because he's such a nice guy and he kind, maybe does he catch a little bit of what's going on? I don't know. Maybe not, we know, and that's enough. And the whole thing feels sad and
I don't know why he would be suspicious of that.
Yeah, but maybe not. No, he probably wouldn't be.
Yeah.
But I'm super suspicious
watching it
and I'm going, oh man, this is all for nothing.
All for nothing. International Day is in full swing. Spinner presents a pizza that is, it has so many toppings that should never be together to symbolize his multiculturalism. And he's dressed as an explorer to really drive that point home.
My favorite is his scarf around his neck, the handkerchief.
Yeah. Yep. But Simpson can't get past the undercooking of the pizza and has to spit it out. Spinner says, yeah, he cooked it for 5 minutes. Shouldn't that have been enough?
I rewound that part a bunch to watch Brogren do his thing with that pizza. And his look of disgust was so fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. I thought he did a great job, but I kept watching it over and over.
It must have been the watercress.
It was the watercress. He doesn't like water. He's allergic to watercress.
But if those are undercooked.
Free meat special. And it was fun that you guys still, he's like about to berate you and then the camera dollies back or Steadicam's back and to the next conversation, but he's still kind of berating you about like the, serving uncooked food. Yeah.
I actually didn't catch that. I should watch that scene.
That's a fun little thing. Cause I'm like, what is he saying? Like, what is he actually saying to Shane right now?
Well, I have a funny story about this, that entire day. When the filming of the International Fair Day, I was at a party the night before with Aubrey. I can't remember if there were any other casts there. It was somewhere close to where we were filming. It was a house party. I'm not saying what went on at this party.
What?
I will not say what went on at
what
this
went par- on. Come on,
I
Shane.
Will not say.
Don't hold back on me.
Let's just say the on next us. Day. The next day. Well, that night I was carried home.
Because you were so tired.
Aubrey and his dad. Because I was so tired. Sleepy. It was a long day. Yeah. I showed up at my mom's apartment with my arms around Aubrey on one side and his dad on the other side. Mom's the word on that one. And the next day I was very sick, also from probably being overtired, but having all this food in my face. And I think there was originally a shot where I was eating some of that pizza and I was throwing up in between takes. I had to keep running to the garbage can and throwing up. So when I watched it today, I'm like,
what did you tell
maybe a little
the
bit
crew?
Pale. Oh, I told them what went on, that I just was too
okay. What did
tired.
You tell Linda?
I don't think Linda found out because I wasn't late and I was still doing my job.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
that's insane.
Yeah,
I love it.
As long as you show up,
you do
and
your
you know
job.
Your lines and you
welcome
do your
to
job.
Showbiz, kid.
Yeah, and I think I just looked a little bit pale, but I don't think anyone else would have noticed. I just
no, I mean
to
your
look
bleach blonde hair made it look like you had a tan by comparison. So
there you go, there you
you're,
go.
You're good.
We planned it all out. So after Spinner's pizza incident, as it will now be known, Radich is over at Paige Michael Chuck's Ukrainian display, but he cannot get past her sexualized traditional Ukrainian attire that seems to be all he can focus on until Paige offers him a pierogi and it quickly changes
his art. Suspicious eyebrow deflates quite quickly.
Yep.
Heck of a pierogi.
Simpson now lands on Hazel in full-blown Jamaican getup. When he tries the chicken, he is blown away by it, and Hazel says that it's her mother's recipe, family recipe.
Mm.
But Simpson, coincidentally, also eats at the Crescent Moon Jamaican restaurant and tells Hazel that this could give them a run for their money. So Hazel quickly reiterates that it's a family recipe. Her mom and the other Jamaican cooks obviously all learn from the same place, being Jamaica.
Yeah, the Martha Stewart of jerk chicken recipes.
And after Simpson walks off, Hazel makes eyes at Fariza, who is standing in front of an Iraqi display, and there is a tense stare down between the two of them. Now we are outside, and Hazel has a run-in with Fariza for the first time since the fashion terrorism citation. And Fariza questions Hazel's Jamaican display because her last name, Adden, is not Jamaican, it's Somalian. And come to think of it, Hazel, you actually look Somalian yourself, implying that Hazel might also be Muslim. But Hazel rages in defense and quickly storms off, but not before threatening Fariza with Jamaica declaring war on Iraq if she doesn't stop this nonsense.
Yeah, I got to give Degrassi some props for talking about something like this. This is 2002.
Yeah. So
9/11 has just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And when did Iraq happen?
I want to say that was it was Afghanistan first.
It was Afghanistan first. When was the Iraq war?
2003, maybe, but still, like, it was...
Yeah, it was 2003, right on.
So, yeah, in the wake of 9/11 and Islamophobia...
It's gutsy to do a TV show like this for teens the year after, like, when all this stuff is happening, they went right in... Is it perfect episode? No, there's it's not, but it's, and it oversimplifies things a little bit. You know, it's kind of a complicated issue, but like in 22 minutes, they really tackled this, I thought, in a pretty good way.
It was bold, and they probably got a lot of pushback in certain ways, and the response to it might have been mixed as well. But when we get to that scene with the classroom debate with all the different students on it, we'll get into a discussion about that.
Also, Aden, did her friends not, like, that's not a Jamaican last name. The show there might be asking us to do a little too much work of suspension of disbelief, but I don't know.
I mean, they ask us of that quite a bit, and we're happy to oblige because we love them.
True.
JT and Liberty now work on the skirt. When Liberty compliments JT's skill and tells him he's full of surprises, JT gets visibly uncomfortable, prompting Liberty to ask why guys are so weird about this kind of stuff. And his reply is, "We just are. No more questions. Let me get back to work."
That's my favorite line of the episode, by the way. I was like, this is why I come to Degrassi every week to watch it, is lines like, why are guys so weird about this? I don't know. We just are. There's so much depth and insight to that. And you could probably think about that line for a while. But I will also say this, JT, you are a beast on a sewing machine, my friend.
He is on that thing. He's the perfect character to have this hidden talent.
Yes. Yeah.
There was no one better on Degrassi with everything we know about the character and how like goofy, faux masculine he tries to be all the time. But then he has this thing that is, in his opinion, the opposite of being masculine. And he's really, really good at it. It kind of reminds me of other shows that have characters that are extremely intelligent that think that will alienate them from their friends, so they tend to underachieve so that they're not called nerdy and
that's a good point. And there are people like that, right? And that I see that in JT for sure.
I just hope that it's not as prevalent as it was before, because it's a horrible thing to try to cut yourself down at the knees for talents or skills that you have, or you know, your religion, because you would rather be accepted throughout than, you know, possibly take some backlash that you're not comfortable with.
For sure.
I don't judge. It's scary to be in the shoes of someone that thinks that their true self would not be accepted, especially in high school where things are just so tough anyway. Yeah. And we also learned that JT acquired his gift from being exposed to it through his mother, as she's a seamstress.
I like when we get to know more about the character's backstory in their home, like, even in a one line kind of thing like this, just to fill us in, give us some context on why somebody is the way they are.
Yeah. And we were also talking about the fact that JT hadn't had an episode focus on him.
Truly.
Where we get to understand a little bit more of what makes him tick. And even though this was a B plot, it was quite significant to give his us character, a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Next scene, after lunch, the gang walks back to the fair to find Fariza's display vandalized, things torn away, damaged, and terrorist is spray painted across the entire display.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The gang is in shock. Hazel takes in the pain on Frieza's face and seems to share in it as well.
And also the complexity of, she knows if there's anybody that is going to be blamed for this, it's her. There's like a
I didn't even think of that.
Maybe I'm reading too much into it,
or maybe not. I mean,
or maybe that's just me projecting the like, oh, I know where this is going.
With that in mind, we are now in Simpson's class as Frieza speaks to police in the background, and a tense discussion about hate crimes and racism and stereotypes begin with each of the students chiming in Simpson's class. And then we do snap cuts to other characters at different points in the school.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the opinions are educated, some not, but they're all based in personal beliefs and lived experience. And there is a lot of ideas running up against other ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, that made me uncomfortable because you just see how many opinions there are and how lost in the weeds you can get so quickly in conversations like that. I don't know. What did you feel about that discussion?
The thing that strikes me about this, I often think about this, is like we walk around in society every day. I'm on the subway. I'm walking down the street where hundreds of people, thousands of people around me in a city, and I'm passing people. And I'm just in my own head. I've got my own beliefs, my own ideas, my own blind spots, my own flaws in my thinking. And everybody else has the same thing, but they're different than mine. Some of them might be more similar to mine. Some of them mm-hmm. might be totally different than mine. And it's moments like this when people start talking about them that the friction happens and that you course, start coming yeah. up against the end. And what I think is like, I'm often shocked by that somebody doesn't have a similar opinion as me, right? Because
I think most people are.
I think most people are because there's a bias, right, to your own. Well, I'm average. I'm just mm-hmm. like a general kind of. So I'm probably like by and large in the right frame of mind or mm-hmm. where most people are thinking. But you can actually be quite shocked that people mm-hmm. disagree with you. So this was interesting. There are people who like fear animates them, and then there mm-hmm. are people who aren't quite ruled by fear as much. So that was interesting to see. To me, but who's to say those are wrong points of view or wrong? Yeah. You know, you feel it.
That's exactly what I. So to your point before about being shocked when you bring certain things up in conversation that someone else doesn't share in how you feel, it's hard not to be taken aback and not to get emotional, especially if it's something that's very close to home, something that affects you, your culture, your race, what have you specifically, and it's falling on deaf ears, or someone comes back with a counterpoint that you might not be educated enough to respond to. Mm-hmm. And it can, that's why these conversations can get very heated very quickly.
Yeah.
And it's true. Like there's so many shades of gray that someone's ground to stand on is their lived experience, and somebody else is trying to relate that to historical events that they know about their culture, or they have no skin in the game, but they've done a lot of reading. And then both people, both of the other parties find it insensitive that someone that is not part of this is even trying to mm-hmm. chime in. So mm-hmm. it's so murky. That's why I get that so many people don't want to have these discussions, especially with people that they are close with, because mm-hmm. with religion and with politics, it's better sometimes to stay away from it to preserve the integrity of that relationship. Mm-hmm. Because once you know how someone truly feels and it's at odds with how you feel, it's very hard to get past that with in these specific scenarios.
When feelings get involved to sort of protect the ego and to protect the identity, that's when things get really, really messy. It would be nice to be able to like enter conversations like a Zen Buddhist and just like be truly, you know, like put the ego on the floor, mm-hmm. be truly open to the other person's perspective. And not worry, because I think a lot of it is based on this fear that we have that my belief is maybe not so, it's maybe a little shaky, and the feelings come to protect it, because maybe you don't know if, or you might be a little afraid that you are not believing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And then what does that make me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, does that make me a bad person? So I think we go into that sort of place of protecting because we can't bear the thought that we're a bad person. But I don't think it means you're a bad person if you're ignorant or if you don't have all of the perspective that mm-hmm. you know you might need.
That's a very good point, because the people that dedicate themselves to learn the history of these things, this is what they do. They're studying a certain region's geopolitical history and religious history way back, and it's a full-time gig. So for people to just jump in on it, you're coming in with, you know, predispositions and family opinions and lived experience, and it might be, and in many times is, very limited in your purview of what you know. And then you test it out against someone else's idea, and they come back at you with things that like a completely different perspective that, like I said, you can't educatedly reply to. And then it just leaves people with a sour feeling that they mm-hmm. everyone wants to be an expert in everything, but
That's a good point. And if we can maybe relieve the burden from people for having to be experts, we might mm-hmm. be able to help ourselves navigate these conversations, because then it stops being about who's right and it starts being about like more of an empathy-based approach where it's like, well, I care about you.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to support you. I don't want to fight you. So like maybe you could approach things that way, you know, I don't know.
Yep. But that approach comes with its own problems too, because some would say, if you don't know anything about this, or if you know very little, but unless you have skin in the game, maybe you shouldn't be talking about it at all. But people love to share their opinions, and humans tend to overvalue the less information you have on one thing.
The Dunning-Kruger effect.
The less information you have on something, more you tend to overvalue it and not be able to relinquish.
The more completely you think you know that thing.
Yes, yes.
Which is scary.
So I think the best way would just be to keep an open mind. If you want to have these discussions, try to keep the emotion out of it, as tough as it is, but also be willing to hear things and have your opinion changed and become more well-rounded than just hear something that's polar opposite and completely disregard it because it doesn't coincide with your belief system at mm-hmm. all. But it's challenging. It's very hard.
Yeah, it's hard, man. It's hard.
Yeah.
Okay. I like to dive into my beliefs and challenge them.
Me too. But it can come with a lot of emotional turmoil.
Yeah.
And you won't. But
ego death.
Any good discussion should have you not leave with the same opinion that you had when you went into it. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. But you have to have those discussions or echo chambers do not help in that regard.
But for all intents and purposes, these kids are in it and they're having this discussion, and I think that's a good thing, even though it's uncomfortable. You know, sometimes we have to learn how to be uncomfortable, and mm-hmm. And so this is, I think it's important. I think it was important that they showed this part of what might happen in a situation like this.
Agreed. Another bold choice. Now that whole class discussion ends with Radich coming in and summoning Hazel to his office, drawing concerned reactions from the other classmates. Now we're in Radich's office.
And they're kind of like, what?
Yeah, yeah. In Radich's office now, Radich questions Hazel's involvement in the vandalism, to which Hazel denies any involvement. Radich relies on the accounts of Fariza, saying that Hazel was bullying her, and the threat of Jamaica declaring war on Iraq also did not help Hazel's case. But Hazel brushed it off as a joke. Radich quickly shuts that down as not being funny at all. But during this discussion, the phone rings, and on the call, Radich is informed that the culprits were caught, and it was two grade 10 boys.
Those dang grade 10 boys.
Yes.
I was so curious about those boys. They kind of buried the lead at the end here. It was like, do we get to see them, or
no, they're expelled. We can assume that they're expelled. And maybe hung up in a town square somewhere.
It's totally Jay. It's totally Jay.
Oh, don't say that. No, you're not even there yet.
It's not. Yeah. I don't think he would even do that.
No, I don't think so either.
Well, maybe if there was a personal gain in it for, you know, he would have convinced somebody else to do it for some sort of weird kickback.
So as soon as Hazel sees that Radich now realizes she wasn't involved, she quickly asks if she could go. But Radich is not done with his reprimand yet, and he impresses on her the seriousness of her racist behavior. It's not benign. Actions always begin with words, like Hazel's towards Fariza. And then in front of Hazel, Radich apologizes to Fariza on behalf of the entire school and offers her a chance to recreate her project for display in the front foyer.
That's pretty smart thinking for a principal too. I was like, oh, that's a nice, that's a nice touch.
Yeah. And I like that he didn't just let Hazel off of the hook.
Yeah.
As soon as he found out that she wasn't guilty of this crime.
Yeah, I know. I was like, wow, Radich is like a good, he's a good dad.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's a good leader. He commands respect, and he was a teacher first, and now, yeah, he's...
When's he going to mess up?
I think he does mess up.
Does he actually?
Maybe.
That would be cool.
Maybe I'm mistaking Simpson messing up with Hatzilakos.
Oh.
But there's a reason that Hatzilakos takes over as principal. I'm not sure.
Wait, don't spoil it. Don't spoil it, but maybe.
Yeah, no spoilers. I don't actually know. Someone in the room is desperately trying to share her Degrassi knowledge, but I'm
no.
we're not doing it. We're not doing it.
No
spoilers. Awesome. We'll get there when we get there.
I like though that you've got like a ghostwriter in the room.
It's a ghostwriter. Yeah. Okay. Now, the discussion continues with students in the hallway. JT saying Fariza should have known that the display would draw negative attention, so she should have thought twice before doing it in the first place. Paraphrasing, obviously. And this prompts Toby to reply with, so what? She should just hide who she really is, as he walks off, not happy with the comment. And as JT clocks this and tries to shake it off, Liberty draws the comparison to JT hiding his talents in sewing, saying that he shouldn't hide his true self either. Now, when we first talked about this, I think you were... you picked out this line as a very cool way to dovetail one into the other. I thought this was the tone deaf moment.
Oh, whoa, let's talk about it.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It went from something so heavy to then JT just, you know, having a throwaway comment about, like, I mean, who would actually put up a display from Iraq and think that that was a good idea? And Toby then having a line that should have made JT pause for thought, but he just kind of makes a face at Toby, and Liberty goes right into, yeah, no one should have to hide who they are, like you with the sewing. I thought, like, I saw what they did. I can appreciate it. But I felt with how heavy the subject matter was of the in the A plot, that was a little.
Now that you mention it, I do kind of see that. I do. I might have just changed my mind on that. But No, you're right. You're right.
Well, I don't have to be right. I'm just saying how I felt about it.
It is interesting. Interesting food for thought there. Mm. I'm wondering at what point the audience might have kind of understood what was happening with Hazel. Like, is there a point where people are ahead of Hazel, of the reveal, and they know Hazel's hiding the fact that she's Muslim? And
Well, she was giving little indications the entire time. And I think, like, if you're a student of film, you know that when someone is hiding something, and it usually has to do with what
the other thing that's happening
with what they're running away from. Exactly. Right from her not picking up what Paige was putting down over the Jamaican food. It was like, why would I bring in Jamaican food? So right away, you know that there's a good chance she's not actually Jamaican.
Sure. And she's covering. We know that. Yeah.
And you get that confirmation very quickly at the restaurant. I don't know. Like, you and I, this plot, it was spoiled for us. Mm-hmm. Even if we didn't actually remember from filming back in the day, we've had enough discussion and fans commenting on Hazel's storyline about this. But I probably would have been onto something with that first jerk chicken incident.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Mm. Okay, this JT moment at the end here, when it turns out that all of his problems would have just been solved if he actually embraced his inner skirt maker the whole time.
Okay, so now we're back in Morton's class. Liberty wears JT's skirt and gives JT her new attempt at a pillow. And she tries to encourage him one more time to take the due credit because he really does have a gift. But JT is firm on his position. Morton checks JT's work and notes a modest improvement over last time. Enough to pass, but not enough to make him a star in the industry. Then Liberty shows off the skirt and Morton marvels over every detail of the craftsmanship. JT takes pride in the compliments, but Liberty can't pass this off anymore and confesses to the switcheroo. Morton asks for an explanation, but JT won't admit to it. So Liberty continues saying he can pull her DNA off of the blood from her excuse for a pillow.
Yeah.
Forensics, sir.
I thought that was funny. That was funny.
Morton has heard enough, and he gives them both a see me after class. But Sean, Toby, and the rest of the class start poking fun at JT immediately.
Damn.
Confirming his fears.
Can't catch a break. Kind of makes you realize, why he was hiding. It's like, well, here, there it is.
And immediately, too.
Right away.
Now, Hazel approaches Frieza in the foyer as Frieza is rebuilding her project. And Hazel offers her help, which is promptly declined. She then tells Frieza she's right about Hazel being Somalian. To which Frieza doesn't seem to be that receptive. She knew all along that Hazel was hiding this. But Hazel continues. She's also a Muslim. And then tells a story of a hate crime that she was a victim of at her last school, where she was cornered, hit, and called a terrorist, which is the reason that she hides her true identity now. But she gets no sympathy from Frieza, who says, looks like you learned a lot from it.
Yes.
Now we're at the lockers with JT once again, and Toby and Sean take digs at him. But JT's already ready for this assault. Then a group of girls approach, headed up by Emma and Manny, and JT thinks it's going to be another barrage of insults. However, the girls like the skirt so much that they want to commission him to make them each one, maybe more than one, and compliment him on his talent, leaving Sean and Toby slack-jawed. And in true JT fashion, after hearing that the girls actually like this, giving them a price, he then is quick to say that he would have to measure them. And as soon as they accept, he is right to it. And JT is back, baby.
JT's back. If not, a little creepy.
Yeah. And but he's like a benign pervert.
Benign creepy. Yeah. Like he's like gleefully, he becomes like this like seamstress. Not seamstress. What's the word for a male seamstress?
Seamster.
He's a seamster. And he's like, you know, he's charging. He's a ruthless capitalist, JT.
Yeah.
But also a little bit, creepy. Well, I mean,
$35 for a skirt. That's not horrible.
$35 in 2002 in
for
Canadian
a homemade
money?
Skirt? And the demand, I guess, yeah, that would be the capitalism. But this also leaves Sean and Toby in disbelief. They cannot believe this turn of events.
Yeah, they need to get sewing skills.
We are in Simpsons Class Media Lab again, and Hazel is giving a special presentation entitled The Real Me, in which, in a slideshow, she tells of her birth in Mogadishu, Somalia. And she's of Muslim descent, in fact. When Terry asks about why she doesn't wear a hijab like Fariza does, Hazel explains that it's an important and personal choice for anyone to commit to. And then she finishes off by apologizing for lying about who she was, but she will not live in shame of who she really is anymore. And on Hazel's face, we freeze.
I loved that last moment. It was beautiful. I had shivers. I had goosebumps.
They did a lot in 22 minutes.
Yeah,
They did a lot. And it's not like they shrunk the B plot down so that they could commit heavier to the A. Like they both plots took a lot. I just don't know if I felt that Hazel came to that decision for the right reasons. I don't know. It seemed like she was kind of forced into it.
Sure.
Right? I don't know. Maybe if this was a two-parter, she would have had more opportunities to slowly
come. They could have done a two-parter with this for sure. I think maybe that would have been a better move. It would have been nice to see her make the change out of respect for Fariza and feeling truly bad for Fariza. Although I think there was some of that in there.
There was.
I don't think she fully comprehended the seriousness of her lie and how, and like, how could you know that this was going to be the outcome? And then how could you know that these two grade 10 doinks were gonna do that? And then she was going to be kind of framed as the person who did it. So yeah, she just didn't have time to get there.
It's a real change to go from, you know, being proud of who you are to then being a victim of a racially driven crime to then not just hiding that fact about you, but actively going after, you know, people of your religion to try to deflect as much focus from other people that you could ever be hand in hand with them. It's that's a long plank to walk back from in just a couple scenes of being forced to be a little bit more self-aware. I don't know. So that's why it felt like she was pretty quick to get to that reckoning.
Also, like, I really was looking forward to meeting Hazel's family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think I know the answer, but I really hope we get another good Hazel episode.
I think we know the answer is that we don't. This is the only time. Yeah.
From what I've garnered reading comments online, and now I know what you're talking about, and now I agree with you. So there it is.
But still, well done.
Well done.
And especially during the climate of that time. For sure.
And Andrea, man, Andrea. Congrats. I spoke to Andrea recently. Unfortunately, she's a little busy right now. She couldn't be on the show, but she loves the podcast and gave us her best wishes. Andrea, if you're listening, you killed it. You did a great job.
Did a great job.
As you all know, we love getting emails from you. We've got a Discord, DGrad's Discord, and you can ask us questions there, and we like to answer those from time to time. So we got a few here from Discord I thought we could go through, Shane.
You have my blessing.
Wonderful. Stevie says, I asked this with all the love in the world and respect for Jake Epstein. Does he actually have that cadence to his speech, or did he make a choice there with Craig?
I didn't notice a cadence to his speech.
I didn't notice that either.
But I think that would be indicative of, yes, that's the way that Jake Epstein speaks.
I would say probably also.
Yeah.
All right. Chateau Lobby says, Shane, Spinner is shunned after telling Jimmy what happened with Rick. This is for way later, but thus leading to Jimmy being shot, and it takes a few seasons, but the old friends all come back into your life. How did it feel to be away from those people in scenes on the show for like a season and a half?
It was actually sad because there were so many days that I was on set where I would be with the same core group of cast. And then suddenly I was shunned, so my character wasn't with them, which meant I was barely filming with them. We had our storylines split apart from each other, and that is where Spinner and Jay started getting closer.
You were stuck with me.
Yes.
Stuck on the dark side.
And Darcy. But it was whenever I did get to film with them, it was usually a scene at the dot where Spinner was taking a lot of hate from them, or maybe a classroom scene where Spinner was the outcast and, you know, just taking his lumps. But I remember it was very challenging to be away from the cast that I spent four seasons with and suddenly now barely seeing them at all. Yeah. Ships
not quite as challenging as being in a wheelchair, though. Okay.
Whoa. Nick. Hey. Whoa. Oh, boy.
This is for Mike. The character of Jay changes for the better. Did you notice the changes you were playing Jay or after? That's a really good question. That's also from Chateau Lobby. I mean, I think you notice in scenes where Jay's softening or doing something out of the goodness of his own heart, which you thought was two sizes too small. Mm-hmm. It was like, and I enjoyed those moments because it allowed me to play range. You know, I could go, oh, okay, we're starting to see what he really is, or another side of him underneath all of that crazy noise. I thought it was, but I knew while it was happening and unfolding, but I didn't really, I actually didn't really appreciate the arc until after, because people make so much mention of his redemption arc. So I think it really obviously had a big impact on people and the audience, and so that's cool to see.
He acquired more character currency. The more you understand a character, the more you understand their flaws, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't even remember if I had a last name when I came on the show. I don't think I did. Maybe I did.
Probably just backwards Jay hat one.
Backwards
Carboy?
Hat guy.
Jay Carboy.
Jay Carboy. Jay Carboy.
Yeah.
All right. Gertie the Dino says, you mentioned it being like a badge of honor if somebody was featured in the freeze frames at the end of an episode. How about when someone got to say whatever it takes?
Did anyone ever?
Who?
It's like the character in a movie that gets to say the title of the movie.
Yes.
And then sometimes breaks the fourth wall by looking at the camera when they do that.
Whatever it takes.
What? Hey, you don't get to do it now.
whatever it takes.
I don't know if anyone actually said whatever it takes in the show. That's a very good question. I'm curious if you know any of the fans actually know.
We're going to get skewered for this, Shane.
Yeah.
There's going to be like, we're getting receipts.
Listen, doing better. This is the reason that we're doing the podcast. We're understanding now all of the things that we couldn't speak to before. So, but give us time. It's an evolution, okay?
One last question because we're running out of time here. But Muscle Robo says, were accents something that you were careful about while filming? I feel like for such a Canadian show, I barely hear a boot or sorry. not trying to sound insulting, but I was reading about James Gandolfini actually working with an accent coach to sound more authentic in The Sopranos. Mm-hmm. Or do Canadians not say that much, as I've been led to believe as an American?
I'm very aware of how much I say A, but I never thought that my sorries or abouts sounded Canadian. And it's very funny that you get a whole bunch of us in on a show together and Gertie is saying that it doesn't seem to be coming out all that much, even though we were in our natural habitats. When we go to conventions in the US, people cannot tell us enough. Every time we say about, it sounds like a boot. And So obviously there's something there, but no, we didn't have any dialect or accent coaches. I don't think anyone was trying to not sound Canadian overtly. So it's very funny that there it didn't seem to be coming out.
Mission accomplished?
I don't know.
Who knows? I had somebody in LA stop me. I was walking down the street chatting with my friends and they turned around. They were like, are you from England? I thought I was from England. I'm not. anyways, God, horrible. We're doing accents now. Okay, we're wrapping it up. Once the accents come out, we are wrapping it up.
Yeah, especially I can't expose myself for my complete lack of being able to do that. So, yeah, please go on.
All right. Well, folks, if you don't know, you can catch video episodes ad-free, early release on our Patreon, DGrad's Patreon channel. Please hit us up on Discord, follow DGrad's alum. And if you want to send us emails, questions, comments, whatever, send it to dgradspodcast@gmail.com. We love to hear from you.
We are getting close to 30 episodes already. We've already almost been doing this for a year, Mike. It seemed like a mere flash in the pan idea not too long ago.
It was.
And here we go. I think we're actually becoming a legitimate podcast. And thank you so much to all of you alumni coming along for the ride. We love you. We appreciate you. And hopefully you're liking what we're doing for you. So this has been another DGrads podcast with Shane Kipple and Mike Lobel. And we will see you, as always, next week.
Cheerio.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.